Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Go, New York, go, New York, go. Oh, welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast. I'm Matt Cos, and joining me there is the smartest man in basketball, Zach Lowe. Go take a big bite of fuck off, because Bob Mackiewicz, he was right for game one. That was cruel. Actually, I'm sorry to say that the Zach Lowe podcast is fantastic. Him and Bill Simmons every Sunday, an absolute delight. How you doing, Bob?
I'm good, Matt. And I think this is the best way we've ever started a show.
Well, it's partially, I'm on 4 hours sleep.
You seem kind of ratty today, Matt. You're like shaking your hands around and...
Well, it's, you know what it is? When your team wins something like this, and it's not the championship, but winning game one on the road is so critical when you're an underdog. It took me so long to fall asleep, and I had to wake up at 4:30 because I had to go in studio today doing the morning show. And then I came home, I did a wine podcast. We're here now. I'm working on fumes, Bob, but I'm working on Jalen Brunson, Carl Anthony Towns fumes.
You are like when Jalen Brunson went into the locker room and everyone went, uh-oh, what's that all about? But then, is that the Jalen Brunson music I hear? The triumphant return. So you're like that. You could be down. Oh, but you're not.
Nope. Oh, my God. For anyone who missed it, Bob actually said he would take Brunson over Wembanyama. Everyone thought he was crazy. And after game one, Bob, you were right. I'm sorry to interrupt. Take over.
It's just one game, but my logic was that they're both obviously great and that Wembanyama was the more talented of the two players, but that one, Brunson is just like the bright lights guy. That's just him. And you saw that in the game yesterday. I think he had 3 points in the first quarter and 13 in the fourth. As it went along, he just got better and better, and he was the Thanos. He was inevitable in that fourth quarter. He was hitting crazy shots and really... I think when he's like that, I think everybody else comes along for the ride. It just lifted everyone. So I thought that as great as Brunson is as a player, his ability to rise to the moment might be why I would take him first. And then the second thing was, we don't know if Victor's ready for the finals. We know that he's been great in the playoffs. We know that he's probably the best player in the world today, probably. But he's also a kid, and he's surrounded by kids. And the final is not the conference final. I mean, this is a different thing. Plus, and I don't even think I mentioned it yesterday, but they've had some hard series, and he's taken a shit kicking. So, you know, at what point does he get tired? Anyway, I'm smart today, and I'll take it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, listen, I'm so glad that you're smart. We'll start with Brunson. We'll start there, but we'll get to Wembanyama. Here, to me, is a couple of the most remarkable things about Brunson. A lot of times athletes get beat down by failure. Going into the fourth quarter, Brunson was shooting under 30%. He had a couple more turnovers than he had assists going into the fourth quarter. And then he just went nuclear. Compare that to Chet Holmgren, who took like four shots, maybe not even that many in game seven against. Then on top of that, he got hurt. As you mentioned, he went to the locker room once. He got banged around a couple times. For him to do that in the fourth quarter is incredible because he didn't look great early on. He didn't look great through the first three quarters. And then he just started hitting all the shots in the fourth and so many difficult shots.
Well, the first quarter was just straight up weird because it was like both teams were on methamphetamines. They were just going so hard at each other and missing crazy shots. It felt like there was so much action. And I looked up halfway through the second quarter, and it was like 30 to 25. It's like, wait a minute, how can this be a low-scoring game? There's been nothing but action. But truthfully, guys weren't hitting their shots. I think they were both running on adrenaline. Jalen Brunson may have been caught up in that or not. He certainly got banged up and had to miss a few minutes, but... You know, Doc Rivers on the Bill Simmons podcast said something really, really smart. And I think I can apply this to all sports, which is great teams get better during the playoffs. That the team you are in the first round is not the team you are in the fourth round because you learn how to play together and excellently. So the Knicks, who are kind of shit and beatable in the first round, I've just ascended. And maybe Brunson was a bit like that too. And that's not so uncommon for these big games, is, it takes a minute or two to settle in. But how does he always do it? Like, it was like Tyrese Halliburton last year, where you just thought, okay, now it's time for something amazing to happen. And it always happens.
And he's 6'2", and
Oh, sure he is. Yeah, just like I'm 5'10 and a half, Matt. Wink.
That's a good point. He's 6'2" in heels.
Listed at 6'2".
Yeah, I'm listed at 165.
Yeah, and I'm, yeah, exactly. Exactly. I was gonna say I'm listening at 180. What's that say about me? Where that's the bullshit.
And then he's doing it against such difficult defenders. So many good man-on-man defenders, on-ball defenders, and then Wembanyama. It's the angles, it's the shots, it's the I've got to like the craziest moment. They're down by one. There's under 2 minutes. He gets the offensive rebound, and then a second later, he hits the three-pointer that got the Mike Breen bang, and the Spurs didn't score again. It's like it's everything, the size, the quality of competition, and then doing it in the fourth. Just no notes, chef's kiss.
Before we get to Victor, I was thinking about how the playoffs either confirms or changes what we think about a player. With Brunson, it's just more confirmation, like we said. He just always does this. Karl-Anthony Towns last night, I thought, he was so good, so damn good last night. He played Victor to at least a draw. At least a draw. I thought about how if he has a great playoff series, all the trick-or-treat stuff that we talked about the other day, which Karl-Anthony Towns are you going to get? It won't even matter. Because if he's great in this series, that's all we're going to remember him for. Or at least what we're going to remember him for most.
My second note, you don't get fourth quarter Jalen Brunson heroics unless you have Karl-Anthony Towns in the third quarter. There was two times where, and again, before the fourth quarter started, the Knicks were shooting about 40%, I think 38. They finished with 42%. But twice Karl-Anthony Towns collected the offensive rebound, got the basket. After 3 quarters, he's 18 points, 12 rebounds, 4 assists, 1 steal, and did a great job guarding Wemby. Didn't have all the dumb fouls. The story of Brunson in the fourth quarter is not told without the intelligence and physicality of Karl-Anthony Towns. And this is the longest I've praised Cat in one sitting in his entire time with New York.
We could talk about New York in a second, but the fact that, like, because we should talk about Wemby and the fact that Karl-Anthony Towns played him, I'm going to say to a draw, because Wemby had 26 and 12 and he played all world defense in spots. It's like if he's anybody else, you go, wow, he was really terrific. Like Josh Hart had 15 rebounds and 6 assists and 4 steals, and the world is praising Josh Hart today. Well, I don't think Josh Hart was necessarily more impactful than Victor Wembanyama was, at least not statistically. But there just seemed to be, he just seemed off. There just seemed to be something missing. Like maybe he was rushing. Maybe he was, it was the adrenaline again. I don't know what it is, but.
Cat was smart. Like, Cat was smart on him. He wasn't buying any of the pump fakes. Like, just that was a really defensively sound game from Karl-Anthony Towns and the variety of other Knicks that helped out. But yeah, like that was a great game.
I called OG my number one candidate for the unsung hero, and mostly because of the defense. I anticipated he would play on Victor Wembanyama. They didn't really put him on Wembanyama that much. They didn't
Yeah.
need.
And also on OG, 12 points in the fourth quarter. So OG Anunoby's offense came alive in the fourth, but you're right. You didn't see multiple possessions where it's just OG alone on Wemby.
He's an incredible defender. OG is, he really is. And of course, as Toronto fans, we've seen this a million times, but he's long and he's powerful and he's relentless and he plays smart defense. And they didn't even need it. Like, let's say you get like Karl-Anthony Towns gets carved up in game two by Victor, and I kind of expect he will. You actually have options at this point. Then you can throw somebody else at him. Like, the Knicks looked very deep and very troublesome last night.
Agreed. With by the way, Josh Hart, the best stat. I mean, the 15 rebounds were awesome. They only had 3 points, but who cares? 6 assists and 0 turnovers. If you want to be critical of Wemby, he had 6 turnovers, one critical one late. But that's the best thing about Josh Hart is just he scored 3 points, but but his impact was still pretty big.
It's a very on-the-nose name for a gutsy athlete to be called Hart. It's like if Brand Marchand was called Mr. Rattinger.
Mouse E. Rattinger.
Is that like Chuck E. Cheese? Is that
that's right.
That's where you got it?
That's right.
I picked the Knicks in six, and part of the reason was because they shoot the ball well. When Jalen Williams and A.J. Mitchell went down, the ball wasn't moving nearly as much for Oklahoma City, and their three-point shooting wasn't as good as it could be, and everyone was looking for Shea to bail them out. But there's so much you can do when you're one player, especially when there's not a lot of space. And as we all know from watching and loving basketball, shooting creates space. And that's another reason why Jalen Brunson was able to do so well, is because he had a little bit more room to move. I don't think that's going to stop. I don't think that's going away. I understand the team's on this collective heater and maybe one or two of them will cool off, but fucking Deuce McBride and some guy named Alvarado, who I've never heard of before.
Alvarado, good defensive player from the Pelicans.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
They just like seem to have this endless bag of guys they could bring out. Like in the first quarter, I actually texted my buddy Ihor and said, if the Knicks aren't careful, the Spurs are going to run away with this thing. And they were only up eight, but there had been that 17-point swing, and you just felt like this freight train was starting to come in the Spurs. And they brought out that second unit, and all of a sudden, and Brunson's in the locker room, and Deuce McBride takes over. The Knicks just looked very deep and very hard to beat.
They were down by 14 late in the third, and then the game was tied at 76 going into the fourth. And doing that on the road. I can't speak enough about it, but let's get to Wembanyama.
Okay.
To me, Wembanyama, and you kind of already said it, Bob, is that Wembanyama is so good that he can put up 25 and 14 and a bunch of, and three blocks, and everyone's a little critical. And I get it. He didn't shoot the ball well, but he went to the free throw line 13 times. He made 12 of them. He again does the defense where he forces U-turns all over the place. He hit that three-pointer that cut the lead to five, Mike Brown timeout. He had the drive and the free throw, gave them a 94-93 lead with 3:24 left. Like, Wemby almost got it done, but then he has the one turnover late, and he didn't have an efficient game shooting. But I don't know. I have a hard time being negative about Wembanyama, considering, the Knicks, that was a rock fight for the Knicks, and he's a big reason why.
It's ridiculous if anybody wants to be critical of Victor. I mean, you can say he didn't perform to his utmost capacity. That's true. Think back to the Jordan rules and the Detroit Pistons. And the idea was the Pistons were the team that had finally figured out how to stop Jordan. Well, Jordan still averaged over 20 points against them. He was still really good. Like they didn't turn him into Chet Holmgren, where he was getting 4 points. You're not going to stop Victor, especially if he's super determined the way he is now. He seems to always be determined. But the difference was between him and Brunson, and why I took Brunson as my first overall draft pick in this series, is because when the chips were down, Brunson wasn't beatable, and Victor didn't give that. Like, it's funny, just to bring this over to hockey. Did Carter Hart vastly outplay Freddie Anderson?
No.
But Carter Hart made a key save on Seth Jarvis at the right time, and Freddie didn't make one on Thomas Hertl. And now it's 1-0 Las Vegas. Not all plays are created equal. And your point about turnovers late and, Victor just wasn't great in the last 5 minutes. Wasn't bad, but he wasn't great. And Jalen was. So the Knicks win by 10.
Yep. That's it. That's it. And if you're the NBA, this was the best result. If the Spurs had continued when they were up by 14, let's say they win by 9. That just confirms everyone's like, oh, the best player on the best team, they're going to win it. Bada bing, bada bang, it's done. Knicks, you went through some bad teams. And then we wonder, can the Knicks keep in it? But when the underdog wins game one, the favorite is now chasing, and the favorite gets a little more desperate. The Spurs, they were down 3-2 to the Thunder. They can come back. But it makes the series more compelling having the Knicks win than if it was the Spurs winning.
Also, as the Spurs have to grow as a young team, I want to see if they can solve a problem. And this comes down to coaching and the intelligence of the players on the court. I wrote down in my notes, San Antonio needs more De'Aaron Fox. And that's not a knock against Dylan Harper or Stephon Castle, who are both, phenomenal, especially Harper last night. God, what's like, it's just mind-boggling that he's that good, that young. I want to see a little two-man game between De'Aaron Fox and Victor Wembanyama. I want to see someone who's been around the league a little bit who says, okay, here's what we're going to do out here. We're going to adjust and we're going to pivot. The seven-game series is all about adjustments. And I want to see, like, this is coaching. Like, can San Antonio figure out a plan, now having seen what the Knicks are going to bring, to pivot? Oklahoma City beat them, right? Like that, I mean, I should say, like, that went back and forth. Like, they solved each other and adjusted and solved each other and adjusted. So I don't know. I feel like if it was Pop on the bench for San Antonio, there'd be an adjustment.
And there might be. Here's what the coaching staff of the Spurs need to do. Victor Wembanyama makes life easier for all his teammates defensively. If a guard blows past you, don't worry, Wemby's there to clean it up. And that guard is probably running away like Monty Python and the Holy Grail seeing a rabbit. Like it's like, oh, run away. Like that happens. What to your point about De'Aaron Fox, he's got to make life easier for Wembanyama. Offensively, he's got to work him said, all right, let's get you in a rhythm, let's get you in your spots, let's get you a good shot, let's move around some things so that you feel more comfortable. Because that was really the only thing you could say negative is that Wembanyama looked clunky offensively. Well, that's up to the point guard to help fix.
And he was trying to do too much himself. Like, one of the reasons he had all those turnovers is because he's trying to drive the ball, and that's youthful. Youthful exuberance and whatnot. So you just want a guy, and I guess you could call Fox a vet. I mean, he's certainly been around him a minute. Just somebody needs to settle that team down and say, guys, all we have to do is execute. Let's just do simple things really well. And then the unicorn that is Victor can erase things if they go wrong, which he can. So I feel like the adjustment for San Antonio is actually more mental than it is physical because they're incredibly gifted physically, but they have to solve problems. Let's see if they can do it.
You know who like the biggest loser was last night? Was anyone involved trying to prosecute O.J. Simpson in 1994?
Okay.
Because all the memes came out. The last time the Knicks led in an NBA Finals, it was when they went up 3-2 on the Rockets, and then that was the night or the day of the O.J. Simpson, white Ford Bronco car chase in L.A. And I wonder how many people that were involved are like, oh, do we have to bring this up again? Can I just enjoy the golden years of my life without seeing Al Cowlings behind the wheel of the car?
That's a really weird reference, and I kind of love it. There's a few other things I want to get to on this show, and we've got about 35 minutes total. So is there anything else you want to say about this series before we move on? I think we've covered the nuts and bolts.
Yeah, no, that's basically, all of it. I get to be happy for another day and a half. Like it's a funny thing as a sports fan, when your team goes up 1-0, it's just it, you've been given 40 plus hours of feeling fucking great about your team.
So true. Okay, that's an interesting setup for what I wanted to ask you. Because I was thinking about Carolina and Las Vegas and how little I care about this series. I like that it's well played, but I have no emotional investment in this. I guess a little around Mitch, but I'm sort of over that too. But I was thinking how Shai Theodore got 3 points in that game, game one. And I had him on my fantasy team, and he was kind of shit this year. And I was thinking about how much fantasy performance skews the way we look at the players in the league. Like, we have an irrational relationship to those players because they either really helped us or let us down. You must have this, Matt.
Oh yeah, I in my head I'm trying to I remember Chris Johnson, who had like 2,000 yards rushing 1 year with like the Titans and never did
Lightning.
any.
It was lightning, thunder and
I took him the
lightning.
following year and fuck that guy. Yeah, I got a bunch of those. David Johnson, a running back, another Johnson running back with the Cardinals. Yeah, there's a bunch of those guys out there.
I took Sebastian Aho and I paid a little bit too much money for him, and he's not really scoring much in the playoffs. And I'm like, I could have told you that was going to happen. And then Shai Theodore gets 3 points last night in a big game. It's like, well, where the hell was that? You can't, like, if you've let me down, if anybody gets let down in fantasy, it's like the ex-girlfriend. There's nothing you can tell me that's going to make me feel good about this.
Nope. And you never forget. You never ever forget those. Actually, it's funny. I think pro scouts departments have one hardcore fantasy player on on the staff to try to help them, but worried about certain guys. Actually,
Yes, who was the worst burn you ever got in fantasy?
oh God, we're gonna have to save that. I would have to go back and look at just all the injured players, all. Over and over again. It's a massive list. By the way, Shea Theodore, much like Brunson, started really bad. That first goal by Ehlers, that was Theodore's
I was just about
responsibility. And then he scored the first goal, had those two assists, and was great afterwards. And how many Leaf fans are like, oh, I wish I had one of those on my team?
Poor Leafs fans. So I don't care about this series, and I'm trying to find a way to get myself excited about it, and it's just not working. And then I was listening to a pod today, and they were like, well, if you love good hockey, this is the series for you. And I always think this, if it comes down to just like if you love your sport played well, you're going to love it. That's never good enough. I want a
Not
reason to love
anymore.
it. Not anymore.
Yeah, you listen. You need. I'm sorry, but on some level, I need a hook. Vegas has done all the winning. There's no hook. Carolina is boring as shit, there's not a hook. Being an impressively well-run organization is not enough of a hook. You gotta give me something. The Panthers were hateable. And Connor McDavid, you felt bad for him. He's the Job of the hockey world. Boom, that's all I need. Bob, I'm a simple man. I'm a simple creature. I like ketchup with my French fries. You just got to give me something to hold on to, and I don't have it with Vegas and Carolina.
Two things. One, I think that he's more the Sisyphus than the Job,
Oh,
rolling
yeah.
the top of the mountain to let it roll back down. And two, I don't think ketchup on fries is an indicator of simplicity. I think ketchup on steak is an indicator of simplicity.
All right. First off, two very good corrections because, yes, it was Sisyphus. It wasn't Job. So, how about
Both
this?
made sense, but it wasn't as good as Sisyphus.
How simple am I? Ketchup on a hot dog? I'm fine with that.
Oh, so basically you're like simple in the sense of like stripped down, right?
Yeah.
Ketchup on a hot dog isn't good enough. Would you ever find sometimes when like accoutrements are presented, you feel an obligation to use at least some of them? Like when you go to the hot dog cart and there's 30 little containers of stuff and it's, oh, I can get like sweet corn relish. But like whoever really wants sweet corn relish on their hot dog? But you sit there and think, should I get it though? It's here.
Well, you feel pressure and shame if you're surrounded by the hot dog glitterati. You don't want to be a rube, and just get your ketchup. And so then you got to put other things on to show that you are a sophisticated, you're sophisticated with your wiener.
I wish, wow. Did you mean to say it that way? Of
Of course I did.
course you did. I didn't know that I was going to like sauerkraut on my hot dog, and I do, and I do. But I was shamed into it, and I was sort of like, I'm going to be cool, like those people in New York who talk about putting hot dogs, and they get the steamed buns and then the sauerkraut. I do like it, but there's no question that I was shamed into it.
Yeah, you want to present to the world, the guys behind the deli there. You know exactly how you want your corned beef cut, and you put sauerkraut on your hot dog.
So I got a few questions for you. I kind of want to roll through some stuff. I'll give you some options here. I got a couple NFL questions I'd like to ask you, a little bit about the Jays, and then some just miscellaneous random questions.
Let's do
Where do
it.
you want to go next?
Let's
Let's do
well,
miscellaneous.
sure.
Okay. Alexander Zverev, who has never won a Grand Slam, is now probably going to win the French Open. It looks like he's in the driver's seat. What wine should he drink from Germany? He's a German player. What German wine should he celebrate with when he wins, if he wins, his first major?
He should drink Black Tower. Black Tower was the mass-produced, super cheap, overly sweet Riesling that actually hurt the reputation of Riesling. And no offense to him, winning a major is still impressive. But no Alcaraz, no Sinner. I'm sorry, You're not getting the good stuff. I'm not giving you a Marcus Molitor or Schlazy. No, 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 no. Put that Spotlazy down. And you're getting no Spaybagunda from Baden as well. You're getting the cheap shit. Apologies to you. Enjoy your trophy with a heavy dose of asterisks.
What's less believable to you? Is it Zverev if he wins the French, or was it the Lakers winning the championship for LeBron's fourth title in the bubble?
Well, the Miami Heat were a good team, but they were like a 7 or an 8 seed. I'll still take the Lakers. You know, they had, at least they faced angry Jimmy Butler. It just seems, and tennis people can correct me, it just seems like there's such a drop off. Once you don't have Sinner or Alcaraz to get through, it just doesn't feel as special.
Okay, so not feeling as special, here's my question for you. I was going to make a chili, and we have some ground turkey in the freezer. What are your thoughts on turkey chili? Is it legit, or is it just ground turkey with sauce?
You better really gussy it up.
What is gussying a chili, according to you?
I don't know. I think just using, like say, fresh garlic and using good spices. Like, I've had turkey chili that I've enjoyed. Ground turkey doesn't really have the same flavor as a good, as ground beef. So I think you got to gussy it up. You got to elevate the turkey before it's a good chili.
Okay. The World Cup is coming. This is random question number 3. Just stuff I've been wondering about and thinking about. Who is your team that isn't Canada that you're rooting for? For no particular reason other than you just hope they win.
I'm going to go with, let's see. Italy is out, so that hurts. I don't really have one. I was thinking France because they make great wine, but they're going to be one of the favorites. I still haven't fully invested in the World Cup. If the United States won, that would at least from a job perspective. Yes, okay, that's it. I am rooting for America because from a job perspective, the narratives will be through the roof. The politics, a lot of the games are going to be in the States. The fans would be going nuts. Trump would have to pronounce names. So I will go with America, and I don't feel good about it as a person, but it would be great for my job.
You and I worked together for years, and we did Off the Record together. And I always used to say, I root for 2 things every night, for the Raptors to win and for everyone else to do something stupid.
Yeah.
So that when we woke up, there would be tons of topics and the show would be easy to put together.
Exactly.
I'm actually opposite with America, which is pretty on brand for me. I'm like that sticker that you see in California where it's my favorite teams are UCLA and whoever's playing USC. I'm cheering for any, I would cheer for, who would I cheer for? It would probably be it would have to be like a team of demons and devils for me not to cheer for them.
The thing is this is going down a tricky road, partially because I'm trying to remember all the countries in and not in the World Cup. I'm going to be showing my ass. But what about it would be
okay,
awkward.
No, it's not a big deal for TSN. Don't worry about it.
Shh. They're big into it, I've been told. What about Iran?
Interesting choice. Interesting choice. That is, you've really oscillated from one end of the spectrum to the other. That's pretty amazing. Okay, here's a question for you. Maybe you need time to think about it, but if there was a World Cup of wine, who would be your final four?
I don't need time for that. So obviously Italy and France are going to be the top 2. Going to number 3, that's where it gets difficult. I think you have to have Spain in there. And number 4, I'm going to go personal, okay? I'm going New Zealand. Apologies, Germany. Apologies, South Africa. I'm going New Zealand. I fucking love the Pinots, the Chardonnays, the Pinot Gris. And by the way, they make a great Riesling as well. I'm going to go New Zealand as the upset at number 4.
I kind of felt like you would because I ask you, can you recommend wine? You often go to New Zealand wines. I think it's because people get them. Like, they're not very difficult to understand wines and they're very tasty. So what was your top 4 then? Rank them again.
France, mm-hmm. Italy, Spain, New Zealand, with apologies to Germany, the United States, Canada, and of course, South Africa. South America, you can fuck off. I'm not a fan of South American wine.
Really? I was about to ask. What about Argentina?
Yeah. Nope. Get out of here. I mean, it's listen, it's not like there isn't brilliant wines, but I only have so much time on this planet. So unfortunately, you got to say no to someone. You know, it's like voting on the third all NBA third team. Some Scotty Barnes is going to be left off. So apologies.
Okay, then. Quick hockey question for you. Manny Malhotra was just hired by the Vancouver Canucks. And fans there are apparently really happy with Ryan Anderson as their GM and Manny Malhotra as their coach. And they're feeling excited about this rebuild. This is what I was listening to some guy out in Vancouver talk about. And they just said the fan base is pretty much behind this new direction. What needs to happen for Leafs fans to feel good about September in your mind?
Okay, so here's, and by the way, a novelty. A Canadian fan base is happy with their team. So, you know, in Men in Black, the little thing that your memory gets zapped.
The forgetter button.
So yeah. You're gonna have to, you build one the size of the CN Tower, and then you whap, and then everyone gets happy. How about that?
Yeah, I love that. I love that. So this raises my last question for you. I don't know if you heard Scott Pelley was fired by CBS, the host of 60 Minutes.
I did see that. Yeah.
Yeah. He had this big tirade at an all hands meeting and ripped the administration. And the next day they fired him. And it was because Barry Weiss and the group that has been brought in to run CBS, they're very affiliated with the conservative politics. And there's all this feeling that they're kowtowing, particularly at the corporate level, to Trump. You know, so there's just resistance internally, and Scott Pelley felt the show was being cannibalized and said it, and they fired him. More beleaguered Pelley, Scott Pelley or Keith Pelley?
Scott Pelley, because at least the Leafs won the first overall pick in the draft. It gives Keith Pelley a little bit of cover.
You know, I was thinking about with 60 Minutes, how many of us actually ever watched 60 Minutes at the end of the football game when we were growing up? Did you not find that you would always, like, at least see what was on the show, even though you had no interest in the world as a 14-year-old?
Yeah, because as a 14-year-old, it was 1989. I only had so many options. They're redoing The Littlest Hobo. That show used to get millions because we didn't have as many entertainment options. So absolutely. And also in the late 80s, you know, you had these, like, you know, ooh, these villains from around the world. Oh, what's going on with Yasser Arafat? That's a funny name. I can't wait to hear what's going on.
And well, Noriega. Yeah, the list goes on and on. By the way, you can explain a little bit about the reboot of Littlest Hobo. You addressed it. Do you know who's making it?
Yeah, it's Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg are going to remake The Littlest Hobo. I was thinking if you could redo any old Canadian show, because some of them were hokey, but if you could redo any one of them, which one would it be? I actually have an answer if you want to think about it.
What's your answer?
Remember a show in the 80s called Seeing Things with Louis Del Grande?
I do not.
He was like a reporter that had like visions and it helped him to solve crimes. That show would be killer right now. But since you don't know it, that won't mean anything. Maybe the Beachcombers too.
Beachcombers would be a great one. I mean, I'm wondering who plays Relic?
That's a great question. Who's our number one, like,
Does it have to be a Canadian? Steve Buscemi would make a great Relic.
That is such a great suggestion. You know, stop the clock. I was going to find a Canadian equivalent, but why would we do that? We only got a few minutes left, and I got a couple football questions for you.
Yep.
We didn't get a chance to talk about the Myles Garrett deal because it happened just after we taped on Monday. So Myles Garrett to the Rams. Your thoughts?
The Rams are going back to what they do. They get rid of first-round picks, but they bring in top-level talent. It won them a Super Bowl. They've gone to the playoffs more than any team in the NFC, except for Philadelphia, since they started doing it. And also, they drafted really well. They drafted Jared Verse and Kobe Turner. They drafted all these great players on the defensive line, which allowed them to get Myles Garrett because he needed to trade 25-year-old Jared Verse and some picks. So this is about when the Rams do have draft picks, they use them well, and this makes total sense. Myles Garrett's numbers, considering how much he was double-teamed or chipped, were nuts. So now you got the MVP in Matt Stafford, Defensive Player of the Year in Myles Garrett, and the Rams clearly now have leaped over Seattle for the best team. Seattle did lose their offensive coordinator.
Okay, last question for me before we hang up, unless you got more stuff to do. Russell Wilson, officially retires, says he's going to be going to the booth. I think it's for that evil bastard network, CBS. But any final thoughts on Russell Wilson's career?
If we put together a list of athletes that were defined either positively or negatively by one play, like you could do David Tyree helmet catch. He wasn't a good wide receiver. But the Russell Wilson interception, Malcolm Butler in the Super Bowl changed everything. He was about to be a back-to-back Super Bowl champ, dominated and destroyed Peyton Manning 1 year, then Tom Brady the next year. And that all changed on one pass. It's crazy.
That's actually a really good football nerdy one. I'm going to go with something a lot less intellectual or like probably useful to anybody. But I liked them. And it's not easy to like athletes often. I actually like Myles Garrett a lot, too. He's really interesting. But Russell Wilson had an aw shucks quality to him in a league full of like alpha assholes who are quarterbacks. And I'm going to miss him for that. I'm not exactly sure who takes over the aw shucks guy that you really love to root for and you kind of hope for.
The answer is Kirk Cousins. And Bob, my thoughts on Russell Wilson is sauerkraut on a hot dog. Yours is ketchup and ketchup only.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.